An author and a comedian. In fact, he's probably Britain's most eminent stand-up historian. Please welcome Mark Steele.
Thanks very much. So there is an honourable tradition in this country of the press and the political establishment opposing racism. The only proviso being that the racism was at least 30 years ago. And then they're brilliant at it. Oh, it's terrible how the Irish were treated in the 19th century, or about how the blacks were treated in America in the 1960s. That was dreadful. Although at the time, of course, all these people were saying that it was the racism before that that was terrible. And so you then get, when it comes to racism against Muslims now, things like this in The Sun. This is the sort of one of the headlines. Muslims wear the veil to provoke. They use it to threaten us. There was a headline, because some of these veils have serrated edges, you know. They can be vicious. I must have missed something here. There must be hordes of Muslims, women, storming into banks and post offices, holding them up with their sawn-off veils. Is that what's happening? City centres on Friday nights full of Muslim women out of their heads on mango lasses and driving around and holding up people with their drive-by coverings. Is this what's happening? The veil. Can you think of a more physically unthreatening object than a veil? And it's being used to threaten us, apparently. And the Daily Express, which went much further as it tries to. This is a sort of, we can all pick hundreds of these things. It's not a sort of peculiar thing that these sorts of things are written. Muslims constantly demand respect for all their attitudes, no matter how repulsive, barbaric, prejudiced, superstitious, but few show any willingness to embrace the tolerant values of Western democracy. That's wonderful. All in one sentence, it goes completely round. And you know, you put a reasonable argument like that, they still won't listen. What can you do? And of course, in the middle of that peculiar sentence that goes back on itself, there is something that is echoed, not just by bizarre columnists, but by the heads of the government as well, which is this idea that Muslims have created their own ghettos, which is a marvellous take on history, isn't it? That ghettos are created by the people who live in the ghettos. That's what happens when there's a ghetto. Loads of people have thought, let's go and live in the poorest, shabbiest area of town where we can be attacked in the middle of we will try to walk out of it. What an extraordinary idea of a ghetto that is, where these places clearly, where they're the highest unemployment and so on, and of course we know that Muslim communities are where the highest levels of unemployment are in this country, which again leaves a marvellous hole in the logic of the modern racist, given that the latest wave of immigration is from Poles, because it leaves racists going, oh, these bloody Aryans are coming over here taking our Muslims' jobs. No, hang on. But all of this, in a sense, is secondary, it seems to me, to the issue of the context of the debate, which everyone has mentioned. It's the context of the debate that creates the terms of the debate. Because, of course, it's perfectly reasonable for people to discuss the role of the veil in Islam and amongst Muslim community. Of course, that no one should say there shouldn't be a debate about that, but that debate takes on a slightly different turn when the person who decides to create that debate is the foreign secretary of a government that helped launch a war that has killed over 500,000 Muslims. Then it's a slightly different matter about what the debate is. And Tony, his brilliant speech, mentioned that we were vindicated, if you like. I mean, not that there's necessarily any great joy in that, given the carnage that's taken place. The Stop the War movement has been vindicated in its predictions. In a sense, that's true, except that I don't think anyone in the Stop the War movement could have predicted, or would have predicted, the scale of the lies and the carnage, in a way. I don't think a few of us would have suggested, well, there will be no weapons of mass destruction, even false ones, will they be able to find. That the United Nations, by now, is now saying that there is more torture taking place than there was under Saddam, which is an extraordinary achievement. That a place which had no connection with Al-Qaeda is now a place that's full of it. That the scale of the deaths is on a scale so unimaginable. And we keep hearing these figures that go horribly, horribly up and up. And then you get these absurd statements. Margaret Beckett again the other day. Yes, but we need to look at the good news in Iraq. Against all of this. Yes, there's been all the Al-Qaeda and the deaths and the murders and the carnage and the torture. There's no weapons found and the whole thing was fought on a base of premises that turned out to be a pack of lies. But what, there's good news. What, there's a bus lane we've created somewhere in the back of Tikrit somewhere. What are you talking about? It's extraordinary that these people can even hold their heads up at all given all that's happened. And then, of course, in this country, all that's happened, the response to that. And when they say, well, we're doing this on the behalf of the war on terror, they even get the wrong people every time they shoot somebody, and then they don't even apologise for that. They then send the officer who shoots Domenez in Stockwell. He's immediately rearmed so that he can go out and shoot somebody else. All of this takes place. And in the context of that, when the person who is responsible for so much of that decides, I am going to now launch a debate about the role of the veil in Islam, of course that is very, very different. And not only that, but Jack Straw as the Foreign Secretary could have raised this on a number of other occasions in the past. He never, for instance, seemed to mention it when he met the leaders of Saudi Arabia, for example. Instead of complaining about the veils or about the role of women in the country that he was talking to the leader of, he decided to sell them $1 billion worth of arms. So he clearly changed his mind somewhere along the line. Maybe he's been reading The Sun and thought, no, it's not arms and weapons that are the threat, it's the veil. So as long as I don't sell them any of them, we're creating peace. So all of this just suggests to me that it is indeed, as Tony said, an honour to be speaking at something like this, for the very simple reason that whenever these things come up, you have to remind yourself and remind as many people as you can, and that's what I hope this is about, really, that while it's very, very easy to say, wasn't it terrible how the blacks were treated in the 1960s, how the Irish were treated in the 19th century, whatever, it's very easy to stand up and say, I'm against oppression as long as it was the oppression of the Spanish Inquisition against the Jews or something. Of course, the leaders of the British government are very good at doing that. But when it comes to racism, when it's on your doorstep, that's a much harder thing to oppose, especially, it seems, when you're part of New Labour and you've caused a war against these people. And so I'm very proud to have been here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Mark. And we're very proud to have had you here today.